Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, September 22nd, 2013. This is episode 1016. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name, go to hover.com/techguy and use the offer code TECHGUY. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. How you doing, everybody? A good tech day to you. It's the show where we talk about computers and internet and home theater. Scott Wilkinson, Chris Marquardt coming up, our photo guy, in about an hour and a half. We talk about digital photography, too, you bet. We also talk about gadgets and gizmos and cell phones and anything with a chip in it. We got a lot of calls already on the line today, so I'm not going to give you the phone number. This is going to be, we got a full house today, but there's a lot to talk about. I'm glad you're here. We talked the other day actually, it was last weekend with Scott Wilkinson about the passing of an audio legend, Ray Dolby, of Dolby Labs, the guy who gave us a Dolby sound, a noise reduction, remember that? And then Dolby surround sound, Dolby theater sound. Dolby has a competitive company, a company called DTS that also does surround sound. And you know what's funny? Dolby has its own thing. It's called Atmos. I just got an invitation to see the new Gravity, the new movie where, Sandra Bullock is lost in space and George Clooney's got to find her. I'm sure you've seen I don't know. How are they going to do this movie, by the way? It seems like you can get 2 hours or even 90 minutes out of this. What I've seen, I don't know anything much about the movie, but what I've seen in the trailers is Sandra Bullock and George Clooney are astronauts in their spacesuits. They're working on the International Space Station or something like that. And something goes wrong. A comet hits them or blows up. I don't know. It's not clear. And then she goes flying off into space all alone. All alone. I don't know. What is it? 2 hours of her wondering if she's going to get rescued? I don't know. But we'll find it. It looks like a good movie. Comes out October 4th, but I did get an invitation the other day from Dolby Labs to see the movie in their Dolby screening room, which is really nice in San Francisco. I don't know. I'm not going to be in town, so I'm not going to be able to do this. I'd love to. In 3D and with, as you know, I'm not a fan, but I'd go. It's a nice screening room. And then also this Dolby Atmos. And you've heard Scott talk about this. This is the sound. This is surround sound that literally not only goes front and back, left and right, it goes above you. There are speakers above you. So I guess this would be a good movie to have audio all around you. It's got very competitive movie audio. And of course, having it in the home is a big deal. The reason I mention this is I wanted to play for you something cool. And I think probably this isn't going to work on the radio, but I'm going to try it anyway. If you are iPhone owner, and that you can play, I'm going to do it on the iPad. It works on the iPad too. But if you have an iPhone, go search on the App Store for something from Remote Control Productions called Z Plus Music. This is to demonstrate a new technology from DTS, which is a Dolby competitor, called Z Plus, which is very interesting because it is a surround sound that works with headphones. Now, normally, surround sound, you have to have a speaker everywhere the sound is coming from. But in this case, You don't. You can do this in headphones, and that's what makes this kind of interesting, especially for home use. Now, let me see. I have it here. Now, this is probably not going to work. Yes, most of the stations that we're on are...
Z-Plus is an amazing 3D sound
Hold on, Hans.
Choose the type of headphones you're using to get the very best possible 3D experience.
That nice German fellow, or Austrian or whatever, is Hans Zimmer, who composes... He's one of my favorite composers. He did the music for Man of Steel, and he did the Man of Steel music in this Z-Plus format. And this app, this is why I want you to download this app and try it. And if you're on Android, I'm sorry they don't make it yet. I heard they were going to, but I haven't seen it yet. It's hard to find. You look for Remote Control Productions Z-Plus, plus sign. If you're listening on stereo and you're not in a car, which means none of you, because I think almost everybody listens in the car these days. If you happen to be at home and you could put on some headphones, do, just briefly, because you're going to hear the most mind-boggling thing. So even though you only have two speakers, left and right, this stuff uses computer imaging to trick your ear into hearing sound from all around the room. So I'm going to tell Hans I'm wearing headphones over the ear. For some reason, I'm not sure why you choose... what kind of headphones you're wearing, earbuds or on the ear or over the ear. The effect is strongest, I think, in the over the ear, so I'll do that. If you're listening on a mono radio, on an AM radio with, actually there is AM stereo, I guess, but most AMs are mono, it won't sound different. But if you are listening in stereo, put on your headphones if you can. If you're listening on our podcast, you should be hearing this in stereo, in the earbuds. And listen to this. This is kind of mind-boggling. Here's the
left front, right front, center, left side surround.
So what Hans is doing
right side surround
is speaking in each
left
speaker.
Rear, right rear.
So they really do sound behind
left
you,
front,
in front of you. In fact, the first time I did this, I took off the headphones. I thought, oh, wait a minute, there's speakers on in the room. No, there's no speakers
right
on in the room.
Rear,
it is amazing. The spatiality, you really feel like the sound is coming not from your headphones, but from a big sphere outside of you, like from speakers, back and front and up and down and left and right. And this is all done with two speakers. It's using very sophisticated computer imaging and simulation and really tricking your ear, isn't it? We can play the music that's on here. I don't know what it's called. It's pretty dramatic. This is from the movie Man of Steel. And of course, this is free, but you can buy the whole soundtrack in this Z-Plus format. It's pretty dramatic. What, can you tell? Maybe you can't tell. If the best thing to do, if you've got an iPhone, iOS device of any kind, download the free app and play the music. Very impressive. It really is kind of amazing what they can do with this simulation. It's a little expensive if you want to buy the rest of it. It's $2 a track. And I don't know if you bought the soundtrack normally, if you would hear it. This is DTS's, they call it Headphone X, if you're looking for it. The app, I'm not sure why they call it Z Plus if it's Headphone X. I don't know why. But if you're looking for soundtracks or music recorded with this Headphone X technology, it reminds me when I was a kid. When back in the old days, when they put music on pieces of plastic, round pieces of plastic, and you'd play it with a needle. It doesn't sound possible that we listened that way. But don't you remember, those of you who have a certain age, lying on your back, you know, knees up, holding the album cover with headphones on. Those Koss headphones. Listening to the music. That was the way to listen to music. Well, I think maybe headphones are back. Certainly thanks to the iPod. Everybody's got those little earbuds. Get some good ones. Don't be fooled by the Beats and the stuff where it's all about brand, not about quality. But get some good headphones and listen to this. And boy, I hope they put more stuff out with this technology, this Headphone X technology. It is quite impressive, quite amazing. I don't get paid any money for this, but I thought I'd mention it. All right, here we go. We got a show to do. We got calls to answer, questions to help people with. Our website is techguylabs.com. You'll find audio and video from the show, including a stereo podcast, so you can listen to this there. Techguylabs.com. I'm ready to take your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Heather Hammond is the phone ranger, the star of the show. I'm just here. I'm just her support. She answers all the phone calls. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Yeah, I just brought you aboard for your expertise. I'm really running things.
Yeah, she's in charge.
Yeah. But thanks for helping out.
We were playing around. I don't know if you got a chance with the Hans Zimmer stuff. Did you get a chance to put on headphones and do it?
So mine are split.
Collars. Oh, so you don't have
Hans
stereo.
Zimmer. So I didn't get the full effect, but a little bit.
Come over and borrow my iPad and you can listen. It's really remarkable.
Yeah.
Really remarkable.
How do they do that?
And it's free. Well, okay, so that's a good question. I don't know. No. I think I did a good job of explaining it, but if that didn't make any sense to you, then we're out of luck, because that's the entire depth of my knowledge. Let us move to the call portion of the program. That means we've got the lines open, you're answering the calls, and who should I address first?
We're going to Canada.
Yay!
Tom in Ottawa.
I like starting off with Canada. Hey, Tom, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Leo.
Thanks for hanging on. I'm sorry.
No problem at all.
All right.
So I recently bought a Galaxy S4 Android phone.
How do you like it?
I like it a lot. You're right, though. It comes with a lot of added stuff on it, especially here in Canada with all the Rogers apps that you can't delete.
Yeah, so you got two people who are wasting your space. You've got Samsung.
Yeah, exactly.
And Samsung puts, I don't know, like 8 gigabytes of crap on there. And then along comes the carrier, Rogers or Telos or Sprint or AT&T, T-Mobile, Verizon, and they just lard it up. What does Rogers put on your phone?
Oh, there's too many to list. It's a whole screen of red icons.
Oh, I hate that.
I don't know what they do.
And
yeah.
you can't erase them?
No, you can't delete them. I've tried, unless you root your phone, I guess.
It's a big issue on the Galaxy S4 because did you get the 16 gigabyte version, or were you lucky enough to
get it? I think that's all that's available here is the 16 gig.
Yeah, that's the case for many carriers. The problem is there's very little free space on that phone.
Yeah, that is the problem. I've added a micro SD card, though. So.
Well, and, you know, we talk a lot about that, too, how that's a nice feature of Android. You can add memory, but the way Android works, and this is true of Windows Phone, too, is that the card is a second-class citizen. Applications on the S4 can be moved there. The latest update on the S4, they added that feature. But even then, not all apps can be moved. And certainly if apps have widgets, on-screen widgets, they can't be moved. When you take a picture, you can have your picture saved to the SD card unless you want to use burst mode. Then you have to save to the internal storage. So there's a number. It's a second-class citizen. It's not like you're saying, here, I put 32 more gigs in there. And it's very frustrating to me because the S4 has so much junk on it. You know, if you root the S4 and you put the Google Edition on, it's only like 4 gigs for the operating system. It means you have 12 free gigs. But the way it comes to you, how much free space you had?
Yeah, it was about half
Not horrible, but
out of any of my own apps, yeah.
Yeah, but 8 gigs is not a lot these days. And even when you put an SD card in, it's still, you know, move as much as you can to SD card. It's still not.
No, it isn't. Yeah, 8 gigs isn't much.
It's very frustrating. However, I recommend the phone. I love the phone. It's great. In fact, it probably arguably has the best camera of any smartphone. Maybe with the sole exception of the Lumia 1020. It's a very good camera.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying the camera.
Good, good. Well, what can I do for you?
Here's the question I have. I use iTunes. I have an iPod Touch, and I use iTunes to listen to my podcasts on my computer. And what I've been doing for the past few years is syncing the iTunes, my podcast, to my iPod Touch, and then I can take my iPod Touch in the car
and
pick up a podcast where I've left off.
Right.
So I put Double Twist on my Samsung Android phone.
Good.
And it syncs the podcast, but it doesn't remember the position. So I can't. And a couple of hours of long podcast, you can't find your position.
Yeah, you need to use you can't use Double Twist Player to play podcasts. It thinks everything is a song. Well, wait a minute, no. Didn't they add podcasts to Double Twist Player?
They did. It syncs, like, it does sync iTunes to the phone.
But yeah, but I mean, don't they have a, but don't they, when you play, when doesn't it know that it's a podcast?
It does show up in the podcast folder, but it never remembers the position.
Well, that's wrong. There's something wrong there. So I would use a different program. I'd use Dog Catcher. That's what I use on Android.
Okay. Now, will I be able to listen to the Dog Catcher on the computer as well? Because I switch between the two.
No. So Dog Catcher is an Android app. So you'll use Double Twist, which I really like, to synchronize. And you can do that over Wi-Fi. You don't have to plug the phone in. But to synchronize your podcasts over, Dog Catcher, I think we'll find them where Double Twist puts them. If not, you'll have to manually copy them over. Or the best thing to do, which is what I do with Dog Catcher, subscribe to the podcast. Dog Catcher will download them.
Right, but then I can't listen to them on my computer.
Oh, I see what
in
you're
the
saying.
The same way that I use iTunes and iPod Touch, right, which I've been doing for a few years.
Oh, subscribe twice. Nobody will mind that.
Doesn't remember the position.
Oh, wow. You're really picky now. All right. So I get it. You want to download a podcast, make sure it's on all your devices, listen on one, and have it pick up where you left off on the computer or another device?
That's right. It works in the iTunes world. If I had bought an iPhone, I would be able to do that right
really?
Now. Because it works with
it
my
iPhone. It synchronizes the last played position, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm listening to one of your podcasts for about an hour and then I sync it, I can take my iPod and it'll pick up right where it left off.
That might be something that only an Apple device can do. I'm trying to think. We're going to have to get the Android army.
Now, I'd be willing to get rid of iTunes and use a different app on my desktop computer, right, for sure.
Don't know. Don't know. I think part of it is there are not a lot of people who want to do that. Maybe not.
Oh, okay.
Maybe wrong. Usually I listen, for instance, when I listen to podcasts, I listen on my mobile device. I don't listen on my desktop. That's a really good question. Anybody in the chat room have a suggestion? This might be a plus one for Apple. It
works really well with Apple.
Yeah.
I've been working for years. It's easy to run out to my car and pick up my podcast where I left off.
Yeah, I don't. I'll have to think about it. I don't know of a way to do that.
Okay.
Stitcher might do that. That's a good one. Somebody suggested Stitcher. Stitcher, okay, which is a podcasting app that I like a lot, and it might remember desktop and portable. It might remember that. Now, if you use Audible for audiobooks, it does do that. It will sync up for your app and all over the place. And that's a nice feature of Audible. Somebody's saying Pocket Cast. Does Pocket Cast have a desktop interface? That's the question. Because this is the issue. I mean, of course you can do that on your portable device. The question is, does it sync to the desktop as well? I don't know if there's a Pocket Casts for desktop. Actually, there's a Pocket Cast for iPhone. They're saying they don't. Doesn't. I don't know of any way to do it. But you know what? Our vast army might figure it out. We'll keep listening. And also put it on the website, techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. And Mark is in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Pretty good. Twit alumni here.
What does that mean? Did you used to work with us?
Futures in Biotech.
Oh, it's Mark Pelletier. Comment ça va, Mark Pelletier?
Très bien.
Mark is amazing biotech researcher. He used to do a wonderful show called Futures. Still does, futuresinbiotech.com. It's just not on the network anymore. And it's through you, Mark, I met so many amazing, interesting people.
You know, I'll always be grateful for the time we spent on Twit because, speaking to about 100 scientists over 6 years,
so
you know,
much fun.
The world, it helped me guide my research, right? It's like getting mentored every week by Nobel laureates.
Well, how is your research going, by the way? What are you working on?
Well, so we've been developing for the past 5.5 years a drug that treats brain swelling. And brain swelling is the major cause of death and stroke and traumatic brain injury.
What causes brain swelling?
Well, long story short, you're basically, when you have a head trauma or a stroke, there's a lack of oxygen in the brain.
Yeah.
And salt in the brain requires metabolism, requires energy. And as soon as there's a lack of oxygen in the brain, you can no longer pump out the salt. So what happens is your brain takes in water and causes your brain to swell.
It's what happens if you eat a lot of salt anyway. You get bloated. Well, in this case, your brain's not processing the salt, so it's getting bloated. However, there's not a lot of room to grow in there, is there?
No, and the intracranial pressure, the brain swells, the pressure rises, and then it causes more blood, or it causes blood to stop even further.
It's a vicious circle. Whoa, wow. So you do genetic research. How would you fix that?
Well, it so happens that an American scientist won a Nobel Prize in 2003 for discovering these small molecular water channels that sit at the interface between the blood and the brain. And so our drug goes and hits that, prevents water from going into the brain completely.
Now, that would be a bad thing in a normal person, right?
No,
you don't want water in your brain ever.
No, well, you can slow it down. And with a drug, you're not blocking all the water. You're just slowing it down. And our drug, we managed to stumble after about 4 years of chemistry on a drug that had already been in humans and is safer than Tylenol. And in our animal models for stroke, eliminates death. So now we have a safe drug, and it eliminates third largest cause of death, at least in animals. And we're going to spend the next 2 years developing it in humans. But
yeah, this is where it gets hard. You can come up with it, but now you got to do clinical trials, and it gets very hard.
Yeah. But I'm very hopeful. We've been,
it's exciting.
Knock on wood. Save a million lives a year.
Well, Mark, I'm proud of you. It sounds like you're doing so great, and it's great to hear from you. Is there a question I can answer?
Yes. Well, I had two photography questions, and boy, you're the hardest working guy in tech. This is I've been listening to these calls. The one big issue is I have about a 70,000 photo library, an iPhoto library.
Yeah.
It's tethering on the one terabyte size. I backed it up. I mean, I'm so fearful. I lost my wife, baby shower pictures before my son was born 10 years ago. And since then, I've been backing it up four or five hard drives at a time. But I'm looking for an online cloud service where I could send them the drive. Because when I've tried the standard cloud services, by 3-4 months, you're 20% done, 30% done.
Yeah, with a terabyte, we've talked about this before. Carbonite, our sponsor, is an online service, but it has to be uploaded to it, and it's not going to take over all of your bandwidth, or you would be unhappy. So with a terabyte, it could take years, literally.
Right, so what's the answer to that?
I'm trying to see if Backblaze does it. I think Backblaze might. So it's perfect, which is, Carbonite will send you a hard drive. They do have that, the reverse direction. You know, if you want to restore it really quickly, they'll send you a crash plan. Somebody's saying crash plan does it. So you want to be able to send them a hard drive to to start your backup in effect. They'll back up, they'll have that data, and then you can trickle up the rest.
Yeah, and then maybe access the photos of the cloud, maybe once every, and then from there sync it with the cloud.
You know, I'll talk to David at Carbonite, because this is absolutely something that Carbonite should do. They added recently, that system. Oh, you know what? John's reminded me of something that I love. I don't know, with 70,000 pictures, John, would it work? I know, it did. Okay, so I'm going to tell you about Everpix, because I do love this service. And John and I both use this. Everpix, everpix.com. You'll put the it is designed to do exactly what you want, but you don't have to send them a drive. And really, what Everpix is all about is solving your photo mess. That's the selling point. So what happens is you're running the Everpix client on your desktop, and it will automatically, whenever there's new photos, it'll upload them. And in the background, in the meantime, it'll upload the rest of them. It uploads them in very high quality. Saves them for you, dedupes them, which is really nice, because I don't know about you, but with 70,000 photos, I'm guessing you have a few duplicates. It will get rid of those.
They're not duplicates.
Well, the nice thing about this is if it's uploading from your all the different sources like phones and stuff, it does happen that you're going to have duplicates.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it'll get rid of those, puts them in a timeline, and also has apps for iOS so you can see your images. This is a little flashback feature that I like. I'm showing it on the screen for those of you watching the video, where it goes back a year and says, here's what you're doing a, on this date, a year, 2 years, 3 years ago. That's kind of fun. So all of my images are on there. Now, one of the things it does that I don't like, it's picking up my email. So I have a lot of images that aren't my images that were just in my email. Maybe that's just a setting I have to fix. But you can tell it where to get your pictures from. You can, yeah, see, that's what I'm getting, photo mail, pictures others have sent me. I don't want that. Anyway, I'd look at EverPix, and then they're telling me CrashPlan lets you send them a hard drive. So I would look at CrashPlan. That's a really good idea. Anybody has an idea, go to the Tech Guy Labs website and add other sites that do this. You understand what Mark's looking for. He has a lot. It's a terabyte of data. He'd like to just put it on a drive. They're not expensive. Mail it to the service kind of as a starting point. And then you could trickle up the new pictures all the time. CrashPlan, I guess.
Yeah. I'll give them a call. And please talk to the folks at Permanent.
I will, because that's a feature they should absolutely have. So nice to talk to you, Mark. I look forward to hearing how the research goes. It sounds like you've got a wonderful, world-beating product. Are there more? If you can control the path, the blood-brain pathway, boy, there's a lot of value there, isn't there?
Well, Leo, remember that the human body is 78% water, and I set up my company to control the physiology of water. So we're going to have a lot of new developments and be able to attack a lot of things like pulmonary edema, swelling of a heart after a heart attack, wow, brain swelling after a stroke, head trauma.
What's the name of your company, and are you public?
Well, for SEC reasons, I'll keep it quiet. People can search my name.
Oh, wow. Good. Yeah, because I know some guys who bought Genentech early on, and they're doing all right. Hey, thank you. Hey, thank you, Mark Pelletier. Great to talk to you. Good luck. Wow, isn't that neat? Isn't that neat? I've known Mark for, I didn't realize, 6 years, and he's just, most of our hosts, frankly, end up in the gutter. So it's nice to know that some of them actually go on to success and fame and fortune. He's referring to the Twit is the podcast network we do at twit.tv, and we do a lot of shows. We used to do the biotech show. It was a lot of fun, but he still does that. Futuresinbiotech.com. And I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on with the show. And Hiwa in Portland, Maine. Hi, Hiwa.
Hey, what's going on, Leo?
Oh, I'm just hanging out. Chilling, relaxing, chillaxing, answering the calls from the homies, you know.
I like that.
What you doing?
I'm just waiting for you to take my call.
Oh, I'm sorry if you were on so long that you probably, you're numb, your feet are numb, but what can I do for you?
Yeah, so I've been anxiously waiting these new MacBook Pros that are about to come out. So I think they're about to come out.
Well, I hope they are. Yeah, because Apple's due to update. You know, they updated the Airs, but they're due to update the MacBook Pros with this new fourth generation Intel, the Haswell chip. So right. I think they'll do it. I would guess there's going to be an event in October, probably, that will in which they'll announce that, and they've got this new Mac Pro that they're talking about. That would be a perfect time to do it. Now, the question is, well, when are they going to announce new iPads? Will it be the same event? Apple could even have, I could see Apple having three events this year. Last year, in their October event, they announced almost everything was updated. So maybe that's what they'll do this year. We don't know.
Okay. Well, I wanted to put Windows 7, if possible, on the new MacBook Pros, but I
perfect.
Want
yeah.
Advice on the best way to on a put Windows.
Here's how I would do it. Here's how I do it. First of all, you know, you're going to have to get a big enough drive to allow you to dedicate some space to Windows. Now, how much depends on how much you're going to use Windows. It only needs about 10 gigabytes for the base install. 10 gigabytes, 20 gigabytes, that's probably enough. So if you have, it's a little tight if you get a 128 gig hard drive. But if you get a 256 or more, you're probably fine.
Okay.
The best way to do it, in my opinion, is to use Boot Camp. When you and the best time to do it is the first time you boot up that computer, because what boot camp will do is repartition the hard drive. It'll divide that single hard drive in the MacBook into two. One of those partitions will be for Windows, and one of them will be for Macintosh. At that point, it'll say, how big is the Windows partition going to be? And that's where you say 10 or 20 gigs, 30. If you have a lot of apps, maybe 40. It just depends. You know, you'll get a sense of how much you need. But 20 is an awful lot, probably plenty. And remember, you can share data, so you will be able to use the Mac partition for data on the Windows side. So then you install Windows with Boot Camp. It'll make a disk or a USB key with Windows drivers for that hardware. That's why it's very important to do that, because only Apple can give you those drivers. Only Apple makes that hardware. So at the very beginning, it'll say, okay, we're going to install Windows now. Get a CD, or because you don't have a CD burner anymore, get a USB key and put the drivers on there. Those are great. You got to have those, or it will not operate.
How large would the drivers be, do you know?
Yeah, pardon me? How?
How large would they be?
Oh, they're not big. The drivers are small.
Okay.
Chat room saying, oh, make it 30 gigs. Make it 40 gigs. It just depends how much space you got and how important Windows is to you. If Windows is your main operating system, obviously you'll give it more than that. If it's just you want to run one or two Windows apps, 20 is plenty.
Okay. And can I still put Windows 7 on there?
You can put Windows 7. You can put Windows 95 if you want. Windows 7 or 8. I would recommend 7, actually. Since you don't have a touch screen, it's probably better anyway. Then there's more. One more step. So now that means you have what we call a dual boot system. When you first turn on the computer, you can hold down the option key, and the Mac will say, what do you want to do? You want to boot Windows or Mac? And you choose. When you're running Windows, it's just like a Windows computer. It has an Apple logo on it, but it's a Windows computer. There's no Mac. But now here's the beauty part. If you want to use an emulator, VMware Fusion or Parallels, either one, and you install those, it'll see your boot camp partition and say, oh, you already have Windows installed. If you want, we'll use that Windows. And then you can, this is the best of all worlds. You can run Mac native, you can run Windows native, you can even run Windows inside the Mac using a VMware Fusion or Parallels. And you don't have to have another install.
Okay, and where would I get the purchase the Windows software?
Ah, well, that's the other thing. You have to own it. So you're going to buy Windows 7. Yeah, you're going to buy Windows 7 or you're going to buy Windows 8.
Okay.
So the chat room is saying, you know, Windows 7 is a big install. It's 20 gigs. I don't think it's 20 gigs. I think 13 is what somebody's saying. That sounds about right. Windows has gotten bigger and bigger. So you're going to figure out how much the install will take and then, of course, add a little more for room, but also for programs, because they have to live on that partition too. You know, I'd say 20 is the minimum, and if you wanted to give it more, go ahead.
Okay.
Okay.
Can I ask you one more quick question?
Sure.
All right. Well, I currently have a MacBook Pro, and I tried installing Windows on it, but I don't know, it's not enough space or not enough RAM. What do you suggest? How much RAM should I get on that new MacBook Pro that I get?
Well, if you're running Windows in boot camp, 4 gigs is fine because it will have access to all the RAM. But if you want to run Windows in a virtualization using VMware Fusion or Parallels, the RAM is shared between Mac OS and Windows. So then 8 would be nice, or more would be nice. Depends how you're going to use Windows. 4 gigs is fine for a basic install of Windows.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Have a good time. I think, you know, believe it or not, well, I think it was Walt Mossberg at the Wall Street Journal who said this. The best Windows machine I ever had was a Macintosh. Because Apple has adopted the Intel platform, they're really using basically the same exact hardware. In fact, in many cases, exactly the same exact hardware as a Windows machine would. So Windows runs very well on it. It's a high-end Windows machine. A lot of debate on how big that Windows 7 partition should be. I'd say no less than 20 gigabytes. 40 then it depends how much more data you want to put there. Not 10, that was an error. Go with 20 at least. Dan in St. Petersburg, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Leo.
Hey.
Hi, long-time caller, first-time listener.
Thank you.
I have a Tumblr page and that requires me updating it daily.
Okay.
And I like to schedule posts, so I don't have to set the computer each morning to update it.
Yeah.
But I want to know, how far in advance can I schedule posts? Do you know?
I don't know. Does Tumblr have that capability that says you can schedule ahead?
Yes, but it doesn't show a physical calendar. It just says, you know, you can input the date or you can just put like next Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Oh, so you're thinking, can I do it for next year?
Well, yeah, because the site is, I plan on running it for at least the next 4 years.
So you'd like to put posts up now that would appear next year?
Yes. I have, it's called Daily Autograph.
Oh, that's cool.
One autograph from my...
Oh, what a neat idea.
And I have over, you know, about 1,500 autographs, so I figure if I do one a day, it's going to take me to, you know, 2017.
So, let me see if it says... It doesn't say. I'm looking at the Tumblr page. You're right. It does not say in the advanced post options. I bet you if you can put in a date, it would be... it will do it. Assuming that assuming the world hasn't blown up and Tumblr's still around and all that.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping Marissa Meyer saved it. So
I think she. I don't think she heard it. Where does it? Is there? Can I? How can I? How do I schedule a post to be published at a later time? You can write in that thing, but I don't know how far.
Right, and I don't want to do something and find out. Oh, it doesn't work.
Never posted. You know? Right.
Yeah.
I would guess.
I have a backup site on Blogspot, the same address, and they actually show you a calendar, so
right.
I at least know that it's going to
they're
be
being, this is the problem with being fancy. So this field that says when you publish it is free text. You can write anything you want, and it'll try to figure it out. Try writing next year. Let's see what it does. I don't know, and I don't see anything that says on the Tumblr site. I don't see anything that says how far ahead you can go. You can publish up to 50 posts a day. You can store 300 posts at a time. Okay, so there's an issue. If you do want to do it daily, you could only do 300 days ahead. But that would be the only thing I can see. How interesting.
Right.
You could use an external system to do this, of course. But if if Tumblr's got it built in, then I think that's a good way to start. But you know about chat rooms reminding me about if this, then that. Have you ever used that?
No, I've never even heard of it.
Everybody should know about if this, then that. It's ifttt.com. And what it does is it lets you create recipes, I guess is the best way to describe it, of activities. And there have a variety of channels. And you can connect one channel to the other channel. So you could say, for instance, when I tweet, make sure it gets posted on Tumblr and that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Tumblr is one of the services it supports. I'll tell you some of the ways I use it. I am out of time. Hey, thank you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, we'll have more with the Tech Guy show in just a little bit. I want to mention our friends at Hover.com, domain name registration done. Right. That's one of the things I like about Hover.com. It's created by the folks at Two Cows, who really have taken this as their mission to take businesses that are badly run, and do it right. Do it simply. Hover.com is a perfect example. They take all the hassle out of owning and managing a domain name. Smart, easy to use, friction-free. They've got great domain name management tools as well. Hover's simple, clean aesthetic, and you don't have to check a lot of boxes or say, no, I don't want that. No, I don't want that before you check out. It's the fastest, easiest way to buy a domain name. They also offer Google Apps now. Basically, you get everything you love about the full suite of Google productivity apps. You get Gmail, Calendar, G Drive, Google Docs, the whole package with your own domain name. You can add it to an existing domain or get a whole new domain. People love Google Apps. You get 25 gig storage at Gmail. And so I think this is really the way to do it. And here's the best part. You get support from Hover, not from Google. Good luck calling Google for support. Hover, as usual, is doing a great job with support. No hold support. You call them, get a rep powered to help you to fix your problem. They'll never put you on hold. This is a great solution, not just for businesses, but I think, you know, think about families and groups who want a domain name and you get all the Google apps. A small school would be great for this. 30-day free trial of the Google Apps to see if it's right for you at hover.com. There's no heavy-handed upselling. There's no cross-selling. They don't hide functionality. You get Whois privacy for free, URL format, all the things you'd want, URL forwarding for free. I love it. They have all the top-level domains, .com, .net, .org, .tv, .pro, .mobi, .biz. They now have .io. I love that. I could really use that. Country codes, too, .ca, .asia, .us, .uk. They will, when you enter in a domain name with a .com, just a little heads up, they'll also tell you about .net. And I think that that's the way to do that. Because if you can't get the .com, .net is the next best choice. I think it's a very good choice. And since most of the .coms are gone, .net would be a logical alternative. And everybody knows. We have trouble with .tv. People go, you mean twit.tv.com? No. So if you say .net, I think it's everybody understands that. Hover.com. Use our offer code TECHGUY. You'll get 10% off at purchase. That's even better. Hover.com/TECHGUY. Use that offer code TECHGUY too. Hover.com/TECHGUY for 10% off. When you're ready to register domain names, make it simple, make it easy. You can even move all your domains with their concierge service. That's what I did. It makes it very easy. Hover.com. Don't forget to use the offer code TECHGUY. Now back to the Tech Guy show. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Thank you for being here. Hour two of the Tech Guy show on this Sunday afternoon, talking about computers and the internet and smartphones and home theater, coming up at 33 and a third after the hour. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, will join us to talk digital photography and bust a photo myth and all of that. We have an assignment, by the way, ongoing assignment. Chris does this not as a competition. There's no reward. No, just the good feeling of knowing you've done a great job. It's really an excuse to get out there and take photos, and it's really a fun thing that he does. So every month or so, we have an assignment. We've still got a couple of weeks, 3 weeks to work on our assignment. I'm going to do it. I'm going to be traveling, and I thought this would be a great time to bring my camera. I don't get to focus as much on photography as I'd like to, except during my spare hours. You know, vacation's a great time. You know, something new to look at, something new to see. So he's asking us to take pictures illustrating the word or concept loud. Doesn't have to be loud music, loud clothes, loud colors. Could be loud, whatever loud is to you. And if you do take a picture, you can upload as many as one per week for the next 3 weeks to our Flickr group. It's the Tech Guy group at flickr.com. And we'll pick three to review mid-October. October, probably on the October 13th show. I said at the end of last hour, I'd talk a little bit about if this, then that, which is about the coolest website in the history of the world, IFTTT. It's a website. They actually have an iPhone app now, too, which is great. You'll want to sign in. It's free. You want to make an account. And then browse around. In order to use it, you have to understand a little bit about what it is. So if this, then that connects things with logic. It actually, and this, don't let this scare you away, but it's actually using the internet to write little programs. So I'll give you a very simple example, and then I'll explain how I did it. I have internet-connected lights. More and more we're going to get these kinds of things, you know, internet-connected stuff, refrigerators, washers, dryers, whatever. But I have these Philips lights. They're called Hue. They're connected to the internet. I know that sounds strange, doesn't it? But they are. I have it set up so that when the sun goes down, the lights come on. Actually, it's just one light in my living room. I can even say which specific light comes on, and I can say what color it is and all of that. And that's nice. It's just a fun, I mean, look, it's a little silly thing, but you could extrapolate from this that you could write an if this, then that script that would say turn the lights on and off at random times at dusk and things like that. But let me explain how it works, because you'll get an idea of what if this, then that can do. So my recipe, and they call these recipes, my recipe is when the sun goes down, turn on my Hue lights. And the way you create it is, and it's if this, then that, right? If sun goes down, and you get that information from one of their 71 channels, in this case, from the Weather Channel. When the sun goes down, then I have also connected my lamps. Turn on the playroom lamp, it says. That's the lamp that goes on.
And this has worked faithfully for months for free. I created it in May every night, and it's a different time every night, isn't it? Because it is literally at sunset. It's not doesn't and it's not using a dark sensor. That's what's really interesting. It's using you know, the Weather Channel's information about the sunset time in my location. It knows my location. So in order to set up an if this then that, first of all, create a free account and then look at the 71 channels and sign up for the ones you have. So you probably have Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, those you can sign up for. You could sign up for stocks so that you can say, for instance, I could do this. When Apple goes below 400, turn my playroom lamp green. Or flicker my light. When I get an email from mom, send me a text. Because I've got my email hooked up and my text messaging hooked up. You obviously have to give it your phone number and so forth. It'll say you're going to get a text message from our phone number, which is a 415 number, just so you know. And this is nice, too, because they have, this is the single, I'm telling you, you got to check this out. It's the single most useful thing ever. You can watch Craigslist for certain kinds of listings and then have a text message sent to you. The output, a lot of people use text messaging as an output. I'm lucky because I have these crazy lights. You can also output to another website. So recently, Twitter changed how it works with Instagram, kind of as a little bit of a slap in the face to Instagram. They said, when people post Instagram pictures and cross-post to Twitter, we'll no longer embed the picture in our Twitter feed. People will just get a link. They'll have to go there. Maybe Instagram did it to Twitter. I don't know. Somebody did it to somebody. It's annoying. It used to be when you take a picture on Instagram, you know, that cool web app or a phone app that lets you take square pictures with filters, that I could have it automatically tweet it and other people would see it. I like that. Well, it's fixed because all you have to do is sign up for the Twitter channel and the Instagram channel. And then you can say, if Leo posts or whoever posts a new picture on Instagram, tweet it, take the picture, put it in the tweet. Oh, man, that's cool. You can say, if I favorite a video on YouTube, but this is one of mine, please put it on Pocket, which is a read it later application I have. I have Pocket on my phones, and you can open Pocket and see all the things that you've saved for later perusal. So it's very easy for me to go click, click, click through YouTube feeds. Yeah, save that, save that, save that, save that. And then later open up my phone, open Pocket, and I have a whole list of videos to watch on my next airplane flight or whatever. A lot of different channels, and there's more all the time. Here's one called Blink. I don't even know what this is. ThingM's Blink is a small USB light. Oh, so I could say Blink, I could plug this ThingM into a USB port on my computer, and then I can say, hey, if somebody mentions me on Twitter, blink the light. Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? You could say, hey, when the sun sets, blink the light. It's nice because they have a lot of recipes. You don't have to you don't have to understand exactly how it works right off the bat. You can go there and steal other people's, borrow other people's recipes. The date and time can be a trigger. So you can use this to remind, you know, send you a text message every Thursday at 11 a.m. so you don't miss something. Yeah, sure, your calendar program will do this, but this is a kind of an outside channel for doing all this. It supports Foursquare, Flickr. I mentioned Flickr. It supports Flickr, email, calendar, of course. You can use Google Talk, Instapaper, iOS contacts. You could say, if somebody in my favorites sends me a text message, please blink the light. I've paired it with these switches from Wemo. Belkin makes this thing called Wemo. That it's a, you plug it into the wall and then plug a thing into it. So you can say, hey, Wemo, turn on the light. You don't have to have these special lights. Turn on the light when it's sunset. Or you could say, hey, Wemo, because Wemo has a sensor for motion, too. Hey, Wemo, when somebody walks into my house, send me a text message. Oh, that's nice. Kind of like a little burglar alarm thing, huh? I just love this. And here's a little something, something. It's fun. You're useful. You probably can play with it. But guess what? When you do this, you're starting to learn how programming works. What? If you get your kids into this, And they will be. You know, you could. They can say, hey, if anybody posts a picture of me on Facebook, send email it to me so I know. Get your kids in with this, because I'll tell you what, without even knowing, they'll be learning how to program computers to get them to do what you want. It's the most fundamental idea of programming. If something happens, then do something else. If this, then that. I love it. It's free. IFTTT.com. I am the tech guy, TTG, at techguylabs.com. More of your calls right after this. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You are, well, you know who you are, so I probably don't have to tell you. We are going to go back to the phones, and let's see. It's Stan in Simi Valley, California. Hi, Stan.
Hi, Leo. Hey. I've been a long-time listener and a first-time caller.
Wonderful. I'm so glad you called. Thank you.
I just let you know that I rooted and put LTE on my Nexus 4 on T-Mobile.
You know,
it works great.
I was looking at how to do that, and it requires not only rooting the phone, but then modifying some text scripts. And I decided not to because I don't think I have LTE on T-Mobile here anyway.
Well, doesn't the other phones you have see the T-Mobile LTE signals?
I don't have any other T-Mobile phones. That's my T-Mobile phone. So you're right. That would be a good test. In fact, I'll put I have my Galaxy S4. I will test it, and I will see. How hard is that to do?
Well, it was very easy because on Pocket Now, there was a simple script. It took me about 5 minutes.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
Was the phone already rooted?
Well, I had to root it to put that in.
But it still only took 5 minutes. So let me explain what's going on here. Because people are going, what, root? What? What is he talking about? So the Nexus 4 is a great phone. By the way, a great deal. Google cut the price by $100. Although they might have sold out of that $249 one. I think they did. So $350 for a 32 gig pure Google phone. It doesn't have any carrier stuff on it. It doesn't even have any manufacturer stuff on it. It's a pure Google phone. Very inexpensive. Really nice phone. It will be replaced by the Nexus 5 any minute now, but for now it's available at play.google.com in the devices section. Google with Android kind of has always said it's okay if you want to root it. We're not going to ship it to you rooted, but we're perfectly fine with it if you root it. Now, some manufacturers notoriously don't allow that. Some do. HTC, for instance, makes it easy to do. Motorola, they say, is going to start making it easy to do. What is rooting it? Well, rooting it means that you're giving yourself full permissions to change anything on the phone. And this is why it's not the default, because it's dangerous. If you have full permissions to do anything, you can turn your phone into a nice piece of plastic, unable to do anything. You can erase all the files on it. It makes you an administrative user, a root user, a super user on the phone. But you do have to take that step if you want to change, you know, fundamental things about the phone. And this is a very good example. The Nexus 4, it's one of the negatives on the Nexus. There's three negatives on the Nexus 4. It doesn't have a removable battery. It doesn't have an SD card slot. And it doesn't support LTE in the United States. Well, one of them's gone now because with those scripts, you can. I don't know. It's odd that you can enable it. I don't understand why, if you could, why wasn't it enabled? That's the strangest thing. So it has the radio.
That's correct, Leo.
It has the. Usually, when something doesn't do LTE, it's because it doesn't have that frequency or it doesn't have the right chip in it. But apparently, it had that capability. Is it full speed? I mean, is it fast? Do you notice it fast?
Oh, yes, I measured up to 33 megs down the street
nice.
From my house.
And one of the reasons I like T-Mobile is it's kind of the also-ran phone company, so you don't have a lot of competition for the bandwidth, which is great.
But I see that already because when I take my wife to the Fry's in Woodland Hills,
it gets busy.
It drops down to 78 megs.
So that's good. So and you said you read that on Pocket Now?
Yes, I believe so. Somebody put a link in the on the chat already.
Oh, good. All right. So we'll try to get that link into our show notes at techguylabs.com. Although with the disclaimer that, you know, you got to know what you're doing. Be careful.
I'm a validation engineer for a fiber optic test company.
Oh, so. All right. You're kind of a geek, in other words.
Yes, I am.
Man, I tell you, we can't get enough bandwidth, can we? Even on mobile, more is always better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stuck to 18 megs on AT&T Uverse, and it's faster on my phone.
Wow.
But because everybody said that there wasn't a power amplifier, I kind of cheated. I also put a Wilson amplifier for LTE.
In your house?
No, in my car.
In your car?
Yes. My wife says, what's this thing on top of the
So these are, we've recommended these before. In fact, I always tell the story of my friend who owns a cell phone store in town, who moved into what he thought was a nice place, but then he realized that I'm in a cell phone store that gets no cell reception. Which was kind of a deal breaker. I don't understand why I didn't test that first. So he got this Wilson, exactly what you got, a little Wilson antenna. You put the antenna out the door, and then you run a wire into the store, and it makes it a little antenna, a little hotspot right inside the store there.
Oh, yes. It's,
it boosts it pretty well for you?
Well, it gives me about 10 dBs of boost.
That's enough.
Well, the thing is, I listened to All About Android on Tuesday evening live, and every time it would drop out when I get on the freeway. Now it doesn't drop out.
Hey, that's all I care about. You're streaming our shows while you're driving down the road on your hacked Nexus 4. Right on, dude. Will you get a Nexus 5 when it comes out?
If I can get by my wife.
Well, you already put the antenna on the car. I can't imagine it getting any worse.
Yes.
Hey, nice to talk to you. Nice to meet you, Stan.
All right, thanks.
And thanks for listening to all of our shows. All About Androids, our weekly look at Android phones. It's fabulous. With Gina Trapani, the founding editor of Lifehacker, Jason Howell from my team, Ron Richards, really experts on Android. If you're interested in Android phones, that's a great show. Really, I listen to it every week because I love this stuff. Android, you kind of getting the feeling, is a little bit more for hackers. A little bit for people like to mess around with stuff. That show is at twit.tv/AAA, All About Android. And we'll put a link on the show notes for that one. Let's see, I have a couple minutes before we have to take a break. Let's see if we can get another one in here. Gary in Evansville, Indiana. Hi, Gary. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Gary?
Yes, hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My very great pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Okay, a year or two ago, you mentioned a tiny hardware firewall, and I'm wondering if you could compare and contrast that with Pro XPN.
They're different things. Does tiny hardware have a VPN built into it?
Yes, it has. It has a hardware component and a software component.
Ah, okay.
It has a little dongle you attach to your machine. And it goes to the internet through the little dongle.
That's right. In fact, I do use this with another VPN service. You're absolutely right. It was a really good deal because it was $99, and I got a year of VPN service plus the hardware.
The only reason I know about it is because you told us about
it. Yeah. Who was that I got that from? I wonder if you can still...
The name of the company is Tiny Hardware Firewall.
Okay. Boy, that was a but the, for the VPN. I was getting it from Hotspot VPN. That's where I got it from. So it's made by a company called Hotspot VPN. And so the idea of this is very clever, but I'm running out of time, so I will have to describe it in our in our next segment. Actually, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is coming up. Can you hang on for a minute? And right after Chris Marquardt, we'll talk a little bit more about what a VPN is. How to do it, and I think this very interesting hardware solution that I forgot about. It's somewhere in the bottom of a drawer somewhere. I'm going to have to resurrect it. Hold on. Don't go anywhere. Chris Marquardt, photo guy, coming up. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, our digital guru. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm still in black and white, though.
I like that. Chris has been, in the last few weeks, has been coming in via Skype in black and white. That's intentional, we should say, right?
Absolutely. I'm not broadcasting from 1960. It's live.
You know what's funny, though? I actually like black and white. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about today, because there is something about black and white that makes pictures special in some way. And People notice when they switch their camera to black and white mode. And by the way, you can do this with your digital camera. If you didn't know this, just switch it to black and white and shoot for a day in black and white. And you will see that pictures that come out are kind of more clear, more they tell clearer stories. They are not as cluttered.
Is it preferable, you think, to set black and white on the camera or to take it a regular color picture and then modify it with software?
Both has its advantages.
There
is a difference. There's one difference. If you do a black and white conversion from a color photo, you will have lots of control. You can change, like, to make red things a bit more bright or green things a bit more dark, and that is all fine and good. But if you learn to see in black and white, here's the reason why black and white and learning to see in black and white is really important, because what lots of people don't realize is that there are things in pictures that are more important than other things. So there's a hierarchy of things in a picture. If you look at a black and white, let's just look at a black and white picture, and you will typically be drawn to the bright things first.
Yeah.
So bright is stronger than dark. Yeah. That's one thing. Bigger things in the picture will draw your attention more than smaller things.
Yeah.
Leading lines that lead you somewhere will be stronger in a black and white picture. Areas with high contrast are typically more looked at than areas with low contrast. So there are a few things that are more important than others. And if you add color into the picture, all of a sudden you're adding a completely additional hierarchy into the picture, because now you have cold and warm colors, like blue and green would be cool colors. Red and orange would be warm colors, and red is more important than green. So the warm colors are more important than the cool colors.
Chris Marquardt's Flickr stream is NUBUI. You can find him at flickr.com. And yeah, he's got a whole folder of black and white shots. And it's interesting. One of them is of a neon sign, which I would never think to shoot in black and white, because color is what makes neon interesting. And yet it is a great picture.
Because the light guides you along the picture. And now imagine you add the color layer. Now, all of a sudden, you could have some competition there. Imagine you have something bright in the left of the picture, but something red in the right of the picture. And they are now kind of fighting for attention.
Right.
So by adding the color on top of the black and white hierarchy, you can either help your pictures by guiding the eye to the right thing, but with the color and the contrast and the brightness, or you could have this huge fight going on between the black and white hierarchy and the color hierarchy.
But so there isn't it's not like everything's better in black and white. I mean, there are sometimes you want to use color.
Not at all.
I'm going to go to Greece. I probably want to use color when I'm pictures of the ocean, because it's going to be blue and beautiful and all of that, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, a black and white ocean is boring.
A black and white ocean can be interesting if there are interesting textures, if the light comes from a right angle.
All right. I stand correct.
But then imagine a sunset. Now you have on the contrast side, you have the bright sun. And if you add the color, if you have the warm color of the sun, then you have a perfect match between the attention that the bright sun gets from a contrast point of view and the attention the sun gets from a color point of view, because it's a warm color.
So those two together
will then go hand in hand.
Why shouldn't I just take every picture in full color so that I have the choice when I get home of color or black and white?
I deliberately set my camera to black and white and then compose through the display, because what that does is it reduces the complexity of the scene in front of me. It kind of takes the detail out and helps me find better compositions. So sometimes shooting in black and white is actually an advantage, because it kind of teaches your eye to see what things work better compositionally, because this underlying black and white hierarchy is really important. It's really a kind of a key thing in every bit of photography.
So now you got me. I'm not going to do this on the trip, because I want all my pictures and I want to choose, but I am going to do an experimental day. I guess that's what would be a good idea.
You want the choice, yeah?
Take a chance, set your camera, if you've got this setting, most point and shoots will do it, to black and white, monochrome, yeah, and go out and shoot for a day, and just as an experiment, get used to it.
Yeah.
A day, an hour, a minute, whatever.
just try it out.
I have to say, I love your black and white images on Flickr. I'm looking at them, and they're really gorgeous. Did you shoot these in black and white, or did you shoot them in color and then later make them in black and white?
Well, some of them were shot on film, so some of them are actually black and white pictures.
Yeah, see,
some
we didn't have the choice in the old days. You would shoot on Tri-X or Plus X, and it would be black and white. That's the film were shooting.
But by having practiced the black and white composition, I could kind of foresee what would happen or what would work and what wouldn't. So then I shot them in color, but I knew that this would work in terms of the lines and this would work in terms of the contrast. And then it's just one of the things you have to develop a feeling for.
So Chris Marquardt is our photo guy. You can find out more. He does, by the way, great workshops. Do you do black and white workshops?
I do some analog photography workshops that are in black and white. Yeah, I did one in Canada, and I'm planning to do more of this kind. Black and white as a topic by itself, I'm still kind of exploring that as a workshop thing. But
you know, I think of street photographers. Some of the best street photography is black and white. You know, because it's about the people,
classic,
it's about their faces.
Yeah.
So if you want to find out about his workshops, the website is discoverthetopfloor.com. Discoverthetopfloor.com. We have a link to Chris, to his black and white photos and more at our website, techguylabs.com. And we're still working on the assignment. This is going to be a long one because of my vacation. What is the topic for our assignment this month?
Loud.
Loud! I'm loud. Loud.
Yeah.
So
very, very soft.
It could be loud colors. It doesn't have to be loud voices. Take a picture illustrating the word or concept loud. We want new pictures. We're not going to take pictures you took before. You got to look for new ones. That's the whole point of this. It's not a competition. It's really just an excuse to get you out there taking pictures. Maybe do some black and white loud pictures.
Why not?
Then you can't loud colors. You have to do something else. but do take them, and you must be a member of Flickr to do this. Fortunately, that's free. It's a Yahoo site. And if you go to Flickr.com and join, make sure you also join our free Tech Guy group. It's just Tech Guy. You'll know it. You're the right one because you'll see a lot of loud pictures. And once a week, you can upload a new one. Make sure you do put the tag LOUD, loud, in there so we'll know it's a submission. And when I get back in a few weeks, we'll do a review. It's a silly thing to do on radio is to review pictures, but it's kind of fun. Of three of our best loud pictures. And meanwhile, here's a subsidiary assignment. Go out and shoot some black and white. I guess it could be monochrome. You could make it sepia tone. It doesn't have to be black and white.
Yeah, the pictures you showed that I have on my gallery, most of them have a little bit of a warm tone, just a little slightly. This one has a cool tone, but some of them have a bit of a warmish tone to give them. It's not quite sepia, but it's almost sepia.
You know, my sign-in screen on my phone is a picture, black and white picture of my son and daughter, and I took it at his graduation party, but I did the same thing. I warmed it up a little bit. It's not black and white. It's kind of a warmer black, and it's just such a soft,
very, very, very subtle thing.
Yeah, I really like it. It's actually one of my favorite pictures. So credit to you, Chris. ChrisMarquardt.com, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. You'll find all those images and information at TechGuyLabs.com. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, taking your calls, talking high tech. Before Chris joined us, we were talking a little bit about something called VPN with Gary in Evansville. You still there, Gary?
Yes, Leo.
Thanks. Good. I'm glad we didn't lose you. So VPN is a very interesting thing that everybody, I think, should know about. It stands for Virtual Private Network. And you've heard probably people talk about, I certainly talk about it a lot, the dangers of accessing the internet at an open Wi-Fi hotspot or a hotel or an airport, anywhere other people are using the internet. When you're doing that, you're on a shared network. And there's risks there. For instance, I'll give you a really good example. If your internet email provider doesn't offer encryption for when you log in, if they don't scramble that, then your login, and this unfortunately is the case in many cases, then your login, your name, your email address, and your password are sent through the air at the airport, at the hotel, at the Starbucks. And people with the right kind of hardware, and it's not very sophisticated, can catch it out of the air, pull it down, and save it. This is a huge risk. Imagine this. Imagine you're sitting at an open Wi-Fi access point in your favorite coffee shop. And, you know, you got an email program running in the background. It checks the email every 15 minutes. You don't even have to activate it. You're typing along. And you're done. Somebody's been sitting next to you. He's been running a sniffer.
that's capturing all the traffic going around in the air. Now, he goes home. He has your email address. He has your login. He has your password. He can check. He can read your email anytime he wants, all the time. And if it happens to be one of the email services that you use to do password recovery, now you're really in trouble, because what he's going to do is, let's see if this person uses a Twitter. And he'll ask for a new Twitter password, and it'll send it to that email account. And without your knowledge, he'll get it. This could go on for hours, days, weeks, months, years. How often have you changed your email or password? So you see the risk there. And there's other stuff. There's lots of other stuff. If you're on an open access spot, if you're using Wi-Fi or using an internet, even if you're at a hotel plugging it in, have you ever done this? At a hotel, you plug in your Ethernet port, and then you look at your iTunes, and you see all these other people's iTunes on it? That's because you're all on the same network. Everybody in the hotel is on the same network. And they can see everything you're doing, and if you had the right software, you could see everything they're doing. So a VPN solves this, because it scrambles everything you do on the internet. Scrambles it all up. There are a lot of different solutions. We have a sponsor on our podcast, proxpn.com. They're very good. And for years, I did use Hotspot VPN, and they do an interesting thing. They make a piece of hardware, and that's what Gary's telling us about, this piece of hardware that it's kind of cool. So you put it on the back of your computer. I mean, it's a little ugly, but it works very well. You put it on the back of your computer with Velcro or something. It picks up the Wi-Fi signal, and then it has an Ethernet jack that goes into your computer. Now, I guess one of the reasons I don't use it anymore is my computer no longer has Ethernet. Apple left it out. But if you have a computer with Ethernet, what you'll do is it'll pick up the Wi-Fi signal, filter it, protect you, and then pass it along. And it will also use a VPN if you would want. It'll protect you against attacks. It's a nice little security box. For people who travel a lot, what a great solution. It was, when I got it, $99, and that included a year of Hotspot VPN. I think that deal continues. So that was a good deal. I can't use it anymore because I don't have Ethernet anymore. VPN is a great solution, though, and if you do these kinds of high-risk activities, like get email at an open access spot, you probably should be using a VPN. Larry in Palo Alto, you're next. Hi, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I'm a fan of your show. I'm a fan of your concept.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you what you thought of not just social networking, but networking in general, with Twitter having its IPO, and how Twitter so much changed how people, even at conferences or shows, would network and get background and interact and talk with each other. How you saw the future of where we all are going with networking and meeting people using technology?
It's a really great question, because it's happening more and more. There's a conference in Hawaii called LobbyCon. And the guy who started it because he realized the best parts of the computer or business conferences he went to, the best parts were the conversations in the lobby, right?
Right. So he David said, Hornick started that. David.
Yeah, you know about it. Yeah. So he said, David's, you know him.
Yeah, I'm with him. He just had a party in his office yesterday. Today's Friday.
Well, you're in Palo Alto. Are you down there on Sand Hill Road?
University Avenue, the cooler food
court. Are you a venture capitalist, Larry?
I'm an angel.
An angel.
I'm an entrepreneur.
How interesting. Wow. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. Yeah, so Dave said, we don't need a conference. We just need the lobby. He is, of course, a VC at a very big August Capital, very big venture capital firm. But I think that's a really inspired idea, and it underscores how important this stuff is. So you see all sorts of interesting solutions. I remember a Comdex, not even a CES, but a Comdex, the old computer trade show many years ago, where IBM showed a technology where you'd have a hard drive in your shoe. And when you when you met somebody and shook their hand, it would make a capacitive connection through your hand to his hand. He'd have a hard drive in his shoe, and it would automatically transmit your contact information across the handshake. Needless to say, this right. This was before smartphones. Needless to say, it did not catch on. But yeah, now we have Bump, right? and other smartphone technologies to do that. And of course, there's also very popular smartphone apps that do like Highlight that will automatically let you know if somebody with the same interests as you is in the same area.
Right, and XCC, I think his name is Jonathan Highlight, where it's a location based.
Yeah.
Where if your smartphone's near, it would just.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't use that stuff because I don't want to network that much. In fact, I probably am not the right guy to ask for this because as I've gotten older, I've become much, much less interested in networking. But you're right. I mean, I'm sure you're on LinkedIn. If you are an employer,
no, I'm not, though.
You're not. Why not?
I don't want to maybe bash LinkedIn, but let me ask you this. How do you find, like, you did such a good job with an earlier caller with Mark, who's a Twit alum, and how you recalled the things that he used to do with biomedical, and you're great in remembering who he introduced you to. How do you vet and filter and let the, like, how do you find the new cool things? Because you're always showcasing the coolest new stuff.
I surround myself with people like Mark, people like you, doing this show. You know why I do all this that I do, the mm-hmm. podcast and the show? Because I want to stay exactly what you just said. I want to keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on. And I realized very early on when I was a young man and when I was about 32, I said, I think I told you this story, Heather. I said, I got to get out of radio. This is not a business for adults. And I said, I got to get out of this thing. So I got a, quote, real job working as a director of marketing for a small tech startup.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 months later, I was going crazy because that I didn't want to focus on one product. I loved the idea of looking at them all, I have the best seats in the house for the revolution that is transforming the world. And I would much rather have the seats than be down there on the playing field, frankly. So I figured that out a long time ago. By the way, that company, which I was the third employee of and had equity in, eventually became Macromedia and was purchased by Adobe. And I'm sure if I had stayed there, I probably wouldn't have to work. But, you know, I'm still having more fun watching it.
But then you'd be doing this because this is what you love. It would circle back to it like that one.
Well, you know, if you're an angel investor, and we should explain for people who aren't, you know, tapped into Silicon Valley, that means somebody who invests small amounts of early startup funds into promising young entrepreneurs and promising companies. That's why you're an angel investor, I'm sure. I mean, partly it's to make money, I guess, but mostly because you get to see the latest, greatest stuff, right?
Right. Right, and to meet undergraduates, what I focus on is undergrad engineers who are working on a sequel concept to something that exists.
Wow.
Wow. You
know? How and I take it mostly coming out of Stanford, I would guess.
Yeah. I call it for the Stanford kids, I call it Palo Alto's Community College.
Thanks. It's a pretty expensive community college. Larry, I wish I had more time. What a pleasure talking to you. Stay in touch. Come up and visit us. You're not so far away.
Definitely will.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll take a break for your news at the top of the hour. We'll come back with more hour number three right ahead on the Tech Guy Show. Our show today on The Tech Guy brought to you by Stamps.com. Gosh knows you've probably heard me talk about Stamps.com by now. It is a great way to eliminate the post office completely. You're still using U.S. mail, but you're printing your own, buying and printing your own stamps at your spot, your desk, your office, your home, wherever you're doing this, with your printer, your computer, no special inks, no postage meter needed, just what you've already got, plus Stamps.com. In fact, we got a guy named Carl Fink who heard our ad, and I wanted to mention him. He heard our ad about Stamps.com. He runs a company called Acura Music Incorporated. They publish classical music books. It's a small company. Carl does everything, including, you know, shipping the products out to his customers. He says he used to use a postage meter, but it didn't calculate postage. It didn't let him know when postage rates had changed. And he said it was always running out of ink, and the ink was expensive. I think it's like 100 times more than inkjet ink. I mean, it's a ripoff, basically. Carl heard me talking about Stamps.com as a better way, and he tried it. And he says, quote, they can package and ship everything so much easier. Stamps.com makes it easy and fast to buy more postage, and he can, quote, print stamps, shipping labels, and envelopes that are addressed and stamped international mailings with customs forms. He says, I don't have to deal with an expensive postage meter. I don't have to go to the post office anymore. Thank you, Stamps.com. Thank you, Carl. Well, A, I'm thrilled you watched the show, and B, I'm glad you learned about Stamps.com. Now, it's your turn. If you do a lot of mailing, do me a favor. Take advantage of this special offer. Visit Stamps.com. You'll see right on the front the $80 offer. Click the microphone. It's in the upper right-hand corner, that old-fashioned radio microphone, and enter the promo code TECHGUY, one word, T-E-C-H-G-U-Y, and you'll get a $110 bonus offer. What we're going to do is give you more free postage, $55 in free postage you can use over the first few months of your account, plus you get the USB scale, plus the kit, plus everything else at Stamps.com. This is a great deal. Visit Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the homepage. You get a month free of Stamps.com when you use my name, Tech Guy, plus a lot of other great stuff. All right, back we go to the Tech Guy Show. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, the Tech Guy Show. We talk about computers, the internet, cell phones and camcorders, home theater, all that jazz each and every weekend right here. I'm glad you're here today. Your digital questions answered on the show. And I tell you what, we talk a lot about technology. It is kind of the toy store, isn't it? Gadgets and gizmos. But I might want to point out that it is more than just, you know, toys here. It's more than, this is important stuff. One of the reasons I love doing what I'm doing is I've got the best seat in the house for the most interesting, fun stuff that is, in fact, not trivial, but is, in fact, in many cases, changing the world. And I can tell you one thing, it's making a lot of people really, really rich. The Forbes list just came out. The 50 richest people in the U.S. of A. Actually, it's the Forbes 400 list. And of the 50 richest people in the USA, 12 of them made their money in technology. And I bet you that number, 12 out of 50, is going to go up and up and up. If you look at the 20 richest Americans, for instance, 35% made their money in tech. And if it weren't for the Walmart company, if it weren't for the family, who are like 8 out of the 20, it would be more. If it weren't for the Walton family and the Koch brothers, more than half of the 10 richest Americans in the world would be tech billionaires, including Bill Gates, founder of Microsoft, Larry Ellison, founder of Oracle, the database company. These guys are billionaires. Michael Bloomberg, former mayor, soon to be former mayor of New York City, who of course made his money with those Bloomberg terminals. I guess that's tech, right? The creator of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, he's number 12 on the list, the richest people in the world. He founded Amazon, Jeff Bezos. Just bought, this is what you do, by the way, when you're that rich. He just laid down $250 million to buy the Washington Post. Why? Because he could. There's no prospect, no expectation of making money with a newspaper in America anymore, but Jeff, you know, I had a little money lying around. This wasn't Amazon that bought the Washington Post. It wasn't it was Jeff with his money, his own. Like, he took out his wallet. He peeled off a couple of $100 million. He said, throw another 50. Here you go, guys. The Graham said, yeah, okay. Thank you, sir. You've bought a wonderful, wonderful business that is dying rapidly. That it's nice to have the money. I'm sure Jeff is a smart enough guy to know that that Washington Post is not going to be a super profitable. I think he wanted to support journalism, and he had the money to do it. Bill Gates, once asked him if he wanted to make more money. He said, at a certain point, and it's before you're a billionaire, at a certain point, you're basically infinitely rich. No, your lifestyle cannot change no matter how much more money you make. You already can buy anything you want. And Bill's been there for a long time. In fact, kudos to Bill Gates, and I'd like to see more of these people on this list, for giving away. Bill's going to give away 90% of his money before the end of his life. He's going to save a little for the kids, a couple billion here or there. But he's done some amazing stuff, amazing philanthropy with those billions. The Googles are on there, too. The guys who founded Google, Larry Page and Sergey Brin.
number 13 and 14 on the richest list of the richest people in the world. They together, and I think if you throw Eric Schmidt in on this, who is the former CEO, I think he's in there too. He's number 49 on the list. I think the three of them, maybe it's just the two of them, only have 16% of Google, but that's enough. They don't have, you know, half of Google. As you, when you start a company like Google and you take venture funding, you slice off pieces bit by bit until, you know, you don't have a majority stake anymore. I think they probably have a voting majority of the shares, but they don't have the majority of all shares. Still, enough to put them 13 and 14 on the list. Now, Mark Zuckerberg is number 20 on the list. He's the youngest. He's the youngest by far. What is he, 25, 26? Could you believe that? Steve Ballmer, the outgoing CEO of Microsoft, is number 21. Michael Dell is 25, even though he just bought Dell and probably spent a little bit of his fortune down. Actually, you know, when you're that rich, you don't lose, you know, it doesn't cost you anything to buy something. I used to work for Paul Allen. He's number 26 on the list. Paul Allen, one of the founders of Microsoft. Interesting story. He was a friend of Bill Gates in high school. Bill went off to Harvard and saw, they were both into computers, and saw the cover of a computer magazine and this new revolution about computers, called his friend Paul back in Seattle, said, "Paul, have you seen this cover? We gotta do something." And they got together. They wrote Microsoft Basic, founded the company. Paul Allen got sick. He got Hodgkin's lymphoma, a form of cancer, and decided to quit. The cancer is in remission. He's fine. This was many years ago. And he's just kind of sitting on the stock. But my point being, Paul Allen has made huge investments without selling any Microsoft stock. He just borrows against it. This stuff doesn't cost him any money. He just borrows against his Microsoft stock. It keeps going up in value. When you get that rich, a hamburger doesn't cost you $1.50. You borrow against your stock. Steve Jobs' widow and Steve Jobs' family is on this list, number 35. I don't know if that's fair, because while Jobs probably made quite a bit of money on Apple, most of his money is from the sale of Pixar to Disney, which was well more than $1 billion. He owns, I think he's one of the number one or number two shareholders of Disney stock. So that's where most of that money comes from. He was. But I'm glad to see he took care of his family. The founder of eBay, Pierre Omidyar, is 47 on the list. And then, as I said, Eric Schmidt, 59. So quite a few tech billionaires out there. When Google went public, Google's just celebrated its 15th birthday. When it went public, so many people became millionaires overnight, including the massage therapist they hired for $450 a week to give them back rubs in the earliest days because they were hunched over their computers. She, $450 a week wasn't a lot of money, so they gave her, here, take some stock too. Of course, when Google went public, she took some stock and made some money. You hear stories like this and you just think, the guy who painted the mural on the wall at Facebook, back when Facebook was just starting out, it was nothing. They wanted a nice mural on the wall of their new offices in Silicon Valley and didn't have the cash, so they said, "Hey, would you paint it? We'll give you some stock." That guy made millions on the stock. Actually, if you look at the people on the list who are under 45, this is only going to get more. You realize it's only going to get more tech billionaires on the list. The people who are under 45 on the list, 20 members of the top 400 are under 45. The youngest is not Zuckerberg. I thought he was the youngest, but he is 8 days older than his Harvard roommate, Dustin Moskovitz. You know, if you want to get rich, go to Harvard and have a roommate who invents something. Steve Ballmer's roommate at Harvard was Bill Gates. Dustin Moskovitz is 29. He's 8 years younger. Eight days younger than Mark Zuckerberg. But because he's co-founder of, I don't even know this guy's name, co-founder of Facebook, he is the youngest billionaire in the country. Dustin Muscovitz. Keep that name in mind. All right. Enough of this. Let's talk tech. Yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next.
I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Very patient. Rob in Russellville, Tennessee. Hi, Rob.
Howdy.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
Well, I got a question. Of course, that's why I called, I guess.
No, we allow anybody to call for any reason, but the question's good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
My late wife was a professional photographer, and she's had about 48,000 photos that she kept, and a number of them were personal in nature, and I need to organize them, find some way to post them on the web in some way that the family can see them online.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, I can't obviously get all 48,000 at one time, but somebody on the chat room had once mentioned Lightroom, but is there something that you would recommend to be able to organize those and be able to do that kind of thing on the web?
Yeah. So actually, Lightroom is a very good choice. The question is, where are you going to put it on the web? So I had, on a very small scale, a similar story. We had family slides. We were a family that took slides, not prints. And I had, 15 carousels, Kodak carousels of slides. And mom had the carousel projector. We weren't going to be able to watch them much. So my sister took them all down to a service, digitized them. And then I categorized them. I spent a little time categorizing them and uploaded them to a site called SmugMug, where I made private albums, password protected albums. And I told everybody in the family, here, you can go here. And here's pictures of when we all lived, on Glenwood Avenue. Here's pictures of when we all lived on Blackstone Boulevard. Here's so that, they could look at those folders. So that's a service called SmugMug. That I don't think that's a pro service. I think you probably could do the same thing with Picasa Web. There's Shutterfly, OPhoto. There are a lot of services that will do this. I think the best one is probably the free Picasa Web, PicasaWeb. Now, the other reason that's nice is they have a partner software package called Picasa that's free that will help you do the organizing. So are all the images digitized already?
The vast majority of them are. Some of them were scanned. I mean, I got her a Canon, couldn't tell you what it was, years ago. And I'd say 3/4 of them are digitized.
Great. So you'll have to digitize the rest. Maybe just start with the ones that are already on disk. You can open them in SmugMug. They'll all appear as thumbnails. It probably, 40,000 is an awful lot, but it probably is not as hard as it might sound, especially if she did any organizing at all. You'll at least have the dates associated with each. So you can immediately organize it chronologically by year, month, day, that kind of thing.
I think that's how she did have most of them.
I'm sure it is, yeah.
My organization is these big rounded things that are on the desk that I can see what everything is just by looking at it.
Yeah, you're old school, yeah. get Picasa. You have a computer, it's Mac or PC, get Picasa. Import all the images. Now you've got them in some sort of order. Picasa will allow you to create albums. It also has some other features that might help. It has face recognition. So if there's a lot of pictures of a particular person and you want to put those all in a folder, you can do that very easily.
She did have a lot of pictures of me, but nobody wants to see my face.
Once you've got them in Picasa Web organized on the hard drive, you literally can connect it to Picasa Web on the internet and have it upload them all in the same exact organization. You can have it private. You can have it public. It's very easy.
Okay.
And this is all free. The only thing is, if it's that many, you may have to pay for extra storage. Google only gives you, I think, 7 gigs to start. But you could in fact, buy more, and it's not very expensive.
Oh, no, there's 17 terabytes so far.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Well, it won't be. Holy cow. It won't be that big because, of course, they'll be smaller on the web. They'll be compressed a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so.
Well, I'm so sorry about your wife, but I think this is a great project and a wonderful way to share them with everybody.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. I hope somebody does that with my pictures after I'm gone. Don't you wonder sometimes when you're taking all these pictures, who's going to ever really? Maybe you don't wonder. Maybe that's the part of the problem. We just take pictures and videos, and someday the kids will want it. The kids don't want it. I already know. My kids do not want to see pictures of me or anybody else. I got a lot of...
I lived with you.
Huh?
I lived with you. I saw you every day.
Yeah. No, the last thing Abby and Henry want is detailed pictures of everything that happened in their childhood. I think. I don't know.
Oh, no. Of course you do.
Well, I cherish them more than I think they do.
They will learn to when they get some distance.
But don't
from
you
it.
Think, I mean, this is the big problem, and all of us baby boomers are facing it now. Really, this is just a burden for them when I kick. I'm going to kick the bucket. They're going to go in the attic and go, oh, Dad saved everything. Oh, my God. What are we going to do? And they're going to throw the hard drives out, and that's that.
Yeah, but it's not like it's shoeboxes of pictures.
No, it's easier for them to throw out. I'm planning ahead. They're all bits. They can throw them out, take them, you know, one garbage can. That's it. That's so, you know, I wonder, why do I spend all this energy editing, putting together, categorizing, all this stuff? Not, my kids don't want this. I keep thinking, though, if I could get past my kids, like my grandkids, my great-grandkids, mm-hmm. wouldn't you love to see the daily life of your great-great-great-great-grandmother? Wouldn't you love that?
Exactly. And I can, and I do. It's awesome.
Wait a minute. You could see the daily life of your great-great-great...
Well, maybe not daily. But the pictures you get...
She draw little pictures in the margins of the book?
No, but like my dad just came back from Iowa not too long ago with a bunch of pictures that I have never seen of my uncle
from
the war and whatnot. And it was like an Easter egg hunt because they were no particular order, and it was like, here he is really young with his dog, here he is in the army, who are these other men that he was friends with? Like, there's just stories there.
Isn't it amazing?
Anyway,
I mean, we think back, you know, to the earliest days of photography around Lincoln's time, and we have pictures, we actually have photos of Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, but somebody, I don't know who, and I wish I could remember because I'd love to give him credit, said that history actually started 10 years ago. Because when we were started, every video, every bit has been recorded. The Library of Congress is now saving all the tweets. Mm. You know, the amount of material, raw material, a historian 100 years from now will have, the detail, they'll be able to really sense what it was like to live in this time. So in a way that we can't do.
Oh, more granular than before. But you've seen that selfie of Lincoln, right?
You know, where Lincoln did not take a selfie. What are you talking about?
Right? He's all, look at my arms.
Hey, I'm pretty good looking here, huh?
Here I am,
what do you
robot.
Think? Hey, ladies. Abe's the name. President's the game. Yeah, maybe, you know what? We have a huge amount of reverence for Abe Lincoln, maybe because we know so little about him.
Exactly. Because we never saw him drunk at a party. Thank God.
So that just underscores what I'm saying, which is our kids have absolutely no respect for us, and they don't want us to save everything, and I don't know why I bother.
And they shouldn't.
But they're sure going to know about our cats, our dogs, our parties, our party habits.
True that.
Abe Lincoln is not impressed.
Here's your mother smoking. She was pregnant with you there.
No. I think I have that picture. Oh, thank you, Heather. We're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. She is Heather Hummann, the phone ranger. Together, we are the Tech Guy Show. I don't know. I'm silly. I'm talking silly. You got me with the Abe Lincoln selfies. That's what cracked me up.
That started it all.
Wow.
To do my superhero pose.
You think maybe that we as have done ourselves as a generation a huge disservice that they will look back, historians will look back at Facebook and say, what, this was the most self-involved, stupidest generation ever.
Yep. They tattoo and pierce everything and photograph everything.
I think that, frankly, previous generations have benefited from our lack of knowledge about how they really lived.
Mm-hmm.
And if we really knew...
pendulum will swing back.
No. No, it's going to get worse. In fact, I ordered a thing... This is so stupid. I ordered a thing called a Memoto. M-E-M-O-T-O.
Thank you.
Not a mimosa, although I wish I'd ordered a mimosa instead of a Momoto. This is called a lifetime logging camera. You wear it around your neck. It's not out yet. It's $279. It includes 1 year of life logging cloud service. This thing takes, it's a little camera that takes a picture every 30 seconds of everything you're doing. Everything. It doesn't ask. It doesn't make a sound. It just sits on your collar and takes a picture of everything you do and uploads it.
Mm, that's wild.
Yeah.
It's making me think of the dash cameras, and they're having
it's like that.
Cameras, I think.
It's like that, except that it doesn't, you know, dash cameras only the last 30 seconds or whatever. You know, so if you have a crash, you can go back and look at it. This records everything.
I mean, is it something that lawyers will probably use?
It goes back to a guy named Gordon Bell, who I have a huge amount of respect for. Gordon Bell was one of the founders of the Digital Equipment Corp. He was a great computer engineer, a legend. I think he's still alive. He is a legend. I think he's at Microsoft Research right now. But his wife, Gwen, got serious Alzheimer's and passed away. But he was thinking a lot because of that about the idea of memories and of remembering your life. And he wrote a book, actually, about this whole idea of recording everything. And he's been doing, it's called Total Recall. He's been doing it for years with a similar device. This is just a commercialized version of the device that he wears around his neck.
That's amazing. It's like the movie Memento, right?
Yeah.
Taking a Polaroid.
He's been doing this since 2001. In this list of things, it's every website he's visited, all 221,173. It's taken 56,000 photos. It's got all his emails, all the documents he's read, all the thousands of phone conversations. He wears a sense cam around his neck, 60,000 images there. And he calls it My Life Bits. And he says it's only possible because of storage sizes so small. And the computer ability to scan this stuff to put it together to make connections, which will only get better in time. They call it big data, but it's big data. It's a little self-centered. It's big data about you, about me. I mean, it's like the ultimate in selfies.
I'm just seeing this other through line, this application. Of if anything happens to you, you've got your own personal
Well, this is because of Gwen. This was of interest to him because he could say, what'd you do today? She could say, well, I don't remember, but let me show you. And she could refer back to it.
That's fabulous. That.
But this goes back to my original premise, which is my kids are not interested in this.
Well, yeah, why would I and watch your life in real time when I'm living my own?
I found a new audience in the NSA. I'm thrilled. Finally, somebody who cares about me and what I'm up to. Darlene in Torrance, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Darlene.
Hi. A pleasure to talk to you. I hope we're having a nice time in Turkey and Venice.
Yes. Let's see. Let me see. I think I'm right now in... I just got on the boat, and we're sailing out of Venice Harbor.
Well, be careful in Venice because when it rains there, you have to have boots to walk through St. Mark's Square.
Well, yeah, because you're practically underwater already. It's in a sandbar. Have you been? Okay. You've obviously been there.
Yes.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I was a flight attendant for many years.
Oh, so you got to get off the plane once in a while.
Yes, definitely.
How nice.
Anyway, let me get to my question.
Sure.
Basically, I'm trying to decide between an iPhone 5S or 5C.
Yeah.
And whether I should buy it at the Apple store or the Verizon store. I'm kind of a little confused on that.
Do you have an iPhone now?
Correct.
Okay. And which iPhone do you have now?
4. I think it's a couple versions back because isn't there like a new charger kind of thing?
Yes.
And so I have the old...
Yeah, that's one thing to be aware of. Yeah, you'll be jumping two generations. Actually, three.
Yeah.
One thing to be aware of is, all of your 30-pin connectors are now obsolete. You can buy an adapter. Apple will sell an adapter. But you'll end up buying all new lightning cables.
Okay.
I would not buy the 5C. The 5C is the same as the 5. It just has this plastic color back. It's a little bit better battery life, but otherwise identical.
Okay, because a battery is important to me because this one, I'm charging it half the day.
Well, then you should get the 5S.
Uh-huh.
First of all, because it's new, your battery will be better anyway. You know, part of the reasons you charge it all the time is because it's an old battery. They can survive a couple of years and then they're kind of no good anymore.
well, and then
the 5S has some remarkable battery saving technologies built into it, and I expect you'll easily get through a day with a 5S.
Great. And then the second question is is there a reason why I should go to the Apple store, or should I go to the Verizon store?
It doesn't matter. I get it from the Apple store because it's better service. They're nicer.
Yeah.
They'll do things like take your iPhone 4 and transfer your data over for you.
Exactly. That's really important.
Yeah. But it's all exactly the same. You tell them you're buying it for Verizon. You make a simple phone call to activate it. I think you will be extremely happy with the upgrade, darling.
Okay. And so I'll probably wait till October. I don't need to stand in line with a bunch of people. And
yeah, it remains to be seen. I think Apple did kind of a mean thing. They allowed people to pre-order the color one, the 5C, but they said you have to get the 5S. If you want it the day it comes out, which was Friday, if you want it the day it comes out, you have to come to the store, which means basically they're disadvantaging their customers to make lines. It's good PR.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's silly. But, you know, I bet you could walk in today. I don't think at this point it's going to be hard to get it.
Yeah.
They made a lot of them. Now, one thing I'll warn you about. You're used to the 4S.
Right.
iOS 7 is a big change, mostly cosmetic. But some little things, like, for instance, I don't know if you do this, but I used to do this all the time on the old iPhone. If I couldn't remember where an app was, I had too many icons, I just slide it to the left and I'd search. You can't do that anymore. Now you slide it down. It's easier, but you have to know that. But the Apple Store, they've been training the geniuses. They've been training the geniuses because they know that people are going to go, what happened? My iPhone's all different. And so the geniuses are particularly expert, and this is another reason to go to the Apple Store, in saying, okay, remember how you did that on the iPhone 4? This is how you do that on the 5C.
Okay.
And the calendar looks different, but it's pretty much the same. 5S, that's right. I want you to get the S. I think you'll like the S.
Right. Okay.
You don't save that much, frankly.
Yeah, right.
You know, the iPhone 5C, I'm convinced C is for kids. C, that is a phone for people under 25 who want bright colors. They're maybe a little bit more price sensitive, but you don't save that much. And of course, it's older technology. It's the 5, not the 5S. So,
Then the other thing is...
Hold on. I got to take a break. Hang on, though. We'll finish up right after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't go anywhere. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to Darlene, who is making the big jump from a 4. You are too, right, Heather? From the 4, possibly to the 5S.
We'll see.
So I want to take a little more time because I think this is what a lot of people are doing this weekend. They're thinking about this, and I think it's a very... a good upgrade. You're going to get that fingerprint reader too, darling. Does it annoy you when you have to enter the password a lot?
I don't have mine locked.
This is what Apple said. They said half of the people who have iPhones don't lock it.
Yeah. So I have to do that fingerprint thing?
No, you don't.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to lock it. I would, because if you don't lock it, then somebody who gets your phone gets everything that's on your phone. But maybe you don't care. Maybe there's nothing on there that you care about.
Yeah.
Right?
What about recycling program that they have?
They will do that. Yeah, so bring your 4 and they'll recycle it for you, yeah.
So they'll transfer it first.
Yep.
Sell me the new phone and take this one and maybe give me a couple bucks off?
No.
Oh, it's not a money thing.
Dream on.
Oh.
If you want to make money for your 4, say I'm keeping it. And then you can sell it. You can go to our sponsor, gazelle.com.
Oh. Right.
And you can get, for an iPhone 4, maybe $100, $150 bucks.
Oh, well.
See?
Okay, that's
good. Yeah, so don't recycle it. Why? Because you know what? They make the $150 bucks. They don't throw it in the trash. They sell it.
Well, this is good information. Yeah, thank you so much.
That's my specialty. You can go to Amazon, they'll do resale. I like Gazelle. They're a sponsor, but Amazon will do this. eBay does it. Lots of places you can sell an old iPhone. Is it in pretty good shape? It sounds like you took good care of it.
No, I've dropped it a but it still works.
Well, that's fine then.
Yeah. Thank you for talking to me.
That's fine. Actually, they're telling me, you're very welcome. Thank you, darling. They're telling me now that Apple does, and I forgot, they just launched this, an upgrade program, a buyback. But I don't know if Apple will give you as much as Gazelle will. So when you're there, here's what you do. Go to Gazelle right now and see how much they'll give you for a kind of beat up iPhone 4. And then you got that in your head. When Apple offers you whatever the buyback program gives you, because they do have a buyback program now, you'll know whether it's worth it or not. My sense is that Apple's not going to give you as much as others might. You know, that might be guess. Somebody in the chat room, Shadow Ywin, says the Boy Genius Report, which is a great little website, did a comparison, and Gazelle was about $50 more. That's not insignificant. Then you can buy a nice case, which you should have. And truthfully, I should have said this, but you probably should lock your phone. Probably should. I don't know. I just think that you don't want people going through your mail and stuff. Well, okay. Here's the deal. If you don't lock your phone, then turn on Find My iPhone. Download the app, turn on Find My iPhone, because then if you lose your iPhone, you can remote wipe it. And you can just say, oh, it's gone. Press a button, and it will erase everything that's on there. That's probably the next best thing. Andrew, Dayton, Ohio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
I am doing great. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for hanging on.
Absolutely. You guys are, for anyone who's never called into the show, just a little public service announcement, you guys are hilarious on hold.
Yeah, we save our best material for when no one's listening.
Well, yeah, because you know, some of it's not necessarily radio ready.
Yeah.
The Lincoln stuff, hilarious.
Well,
anyway.
You know, here's a Lincoln selfie. Somebody in the chat room sent this along to me from the Huffington Post. It's a Lincoln selfie. Well, yeah, there you go.
Old model iPod or something to do?
I don't know. Well, the problem with doing selfies in that era is you had to hold still for 15 seconds, so I don't know how good it would have been.
Wow. I mean, I could see, like, if you're going to do yourself with charcoal or crayons.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
What can I do for you, Andrew?
Well, along my usual lines of questioning, just a thought I had, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it, because I don't know how viable this is, but in an effort to be less trackable by our government and the NSA, I'm wondering if it would behoove me to ditch my smartphone over 3G, 4G service and make it sort of a Wi-Fi tablet while re-enabling one of the drawer full of old, you know, effectively non-smart flip phones.
Well, yes and no. I mean, what the NSA would know with your flip phone is where you are by cell tower triangulation. They wouldn't know by GPS because those didn't have it.
Right.
And they'd know who you call and who calls you. But that's about it. I mean, if you really wanted anonymity, I would go down to the Walmart and buy a burner phone, and that's not really associated with you. That's what I learned that from The Wire. That's what the drug dealers do. You just get
wow. Do you have a burner phone?
No, we talk a lot about the NSA and how much they know and don't know and so forth. It's just too much trouble for me. I just say I'm here. I'm here. If you need me, NSA, just. Come here, because I'm here.
And so basically, you know they're watching, and you're cool with that.
What are you going to do?
I know.
In order to not be watched, you really have to move to a cabin in Alaska.
And there really aren't any left from the real estate listing violence.
And you can't use a credit card. You have to use only cash.
Yup.
By the way, this is a big issue in the future as we move away from cash. Cash is a kind of a controversial subject. It is truly the only truly anonymous way to buy something. But there's a lot of expenses associated with cash. There are a lot of issues about cash. And ultimately, I think everybody wants to move to a cashless society. But then there's no anonymity at all.
Right. And the other big hazard with a cashless society, I think, to most people is that whatever credits you might have or whatever form of a bank account you might have could just be erased with the click of a button.
Well, that's right.
But at the same time, our cash could be rendered valueless just by devaluizing the money that we have.
It's kind of an illusion that your dollar bill in your pocket has any money, any value at all.
Exactly.
That's what they call it a fiat currency, and that's the technical term for it. Fiat means faith. It's a currency only because we all have faith in it. That somebody, right. You can give a dollar, a piece of paper with George Washington on it to somebody, and they'll treat it as if it's worth something. If it weren't,
You know,
but now back in the day when it was backed by gold.
But gold's not, you know what?
Warface, yeah. It was a standard.
Yeah, but what's gold? You know, gold has some industrial value, but nothing like the value we ascribe to it. It's just another, it's metal. So gold was, well, this is a long and complicated conversation, but I don't think gold was in particular more valuable than a piece of paper. I mean, it's just a metal. It's a pretty metal.
Right. Well, see, I think there's a lot of value to gold that's been lost over the years, much like silver.
Gold's a fiat metal. You know, gold has some industrial uses, but nothing like the whatever it is, $1,000 an ounce we give it. It isn't that valuable, really. So it's a fiat metal. It's made up. But this is not technology. There is a technology angle to this, and you're probably aware. You sound like you're sensible about this kind of stuff. You're probably aware of Bitcoin.
Absolutely, yes.
And that's what Bitcoin is a response to. The idea about Bitcoin is this is a crypto. They call it cryptocurrency. It doesn't exist at all, but it is anonymous. So if people pay you in Bitcoin, there's no way of tracing where it came from.
Right. And it's also decentralized. There's no creator of Bitcoin.
There's no federal reserve bank.
Right.
But that's also a negative. You can't pay your taxes in it.
Well, yeah, right.
That's also a negative. Now. And there have been Bitcoin ripoffs where, for instance, people were selling Bitcoin on eBay for dollars. The problem with that is people would do a take back and you'd be out of luck. And, of course, Mt. Gox, which was giving people dollars for Bitcoin, has been frozen in the U.S. because I think the government's a little worried about Bitcoin. So we're in a transitional stage. I think we're entering the future as we speak.
I would agree. So would you advise me ditch the smartphone and go back to old days?
I would advise you to just forget about it. They're spying on you anyway. And, you know, what are we going to do? I think what we really, in all seriousness and not facetious at all, what we ought to do is we really ought to insist, because the government is us, we really ought to insist that they roll back the surveillance state rules like the Patriot Act, and that they treat our privacy as they are constitutionally obligated to. I think instead of running away from it and move into Alaska or stop using credit cards, you write your member of Congress and you say, listen, we have the Fourth Amendment guarantees us privacy against unreasonable search and seizure. What the NSA is doing is violating the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. And you, my friend, you, my congressman, if you want to keep I vote, you better fix it. That's what we ought to do. Don't run away from it. Let's fix it. And on that note, I'm going to run away from you because I'm done. Thank you, Heather Hammond. Thank you, Nathan Staten. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll do this every weekend, next weekend, too. Why don't you come by and say hi as we answer your tech questions, talk about the tech news, and take selfies of ourselves. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.